You're listening to Living Room on KPFA. I'm C.S. Sung, sitting in for Chris Welch. The struggle drags on over the fate of the Pacifica Foundation and its network of five public radio stations, including, of course, this one in Berkeley. Opponents to the current Pacifica leadership and its majority faction on Pacifica's national board were recently heartened by the resignation of four members of that majority, Frank Milspaugh, Michael Palmer, David Acosta, and the Bay Area's own Carolyn Van Putten. Also, Pacifica initiated negotiations between its lawyers and the lawyers behind the three lawsuits pending against the national board, brought by listeners around the country, members of the four of the five local advisory boards, and by dissident Pacifica national board members. In light of these developments, crisis programming on this show has focused primarily on goings-on with the lawsuits and the Pacifica National Board, as well as developments at our sister station WBAI in New York, where recent changes in leadership led to a purge of dissident programmers and staff. Today, we'll take a bit of a different approach and visit with folks in the three other Pacifica signal areas, Los Angeles, D.C., and Houston, to find out how the struggle to return Pacifica to its original mission is being waged and what dissident voices there are thinking and strategizing about. Now, before we get to our guests, I do want to announce that there is no protest today at the Walnut Creek offices of the president of the National Association of Home Builders. This is the group for which Pacifica National Board member Ken Ford works. Turns out that the Walnut Creek address where people gathered on Wednesday was not where NEHB president Bruce Smith actually conducts his business, and so there is a move underway to locate him and get a meeting with him, and we'll hear more about that from our guest John Sheridan later in the program. But first we head to L.A., where we're joined on the phone by Farah Dovare. She is a longtime KPFK listener and activist and a Los Angeles staffer for the Pacifica campaign. KPFK, of course, is where both station manager Mark Shubb and programmer Mark Cooper work, and both of these men strongly support the current Pacifica leadership of Bessie Wash and the Pacifica National Board majority. Welcome, Farah, and although you don't work at KPFK, I do know that you've been in regular contact with programmers there. Begin by telling us about the atmosphere within KPFK.
Hi, number one. Number two is, well, the atmosphere within KPFK, I have been talking about it with some of the programmers there. Also, during the fund drive, we were there every day. And one thing that happened, which was very different from before, was that the volunteers kept joining us. They kept coming out and wanting to talk to us, and they sort of gave us a vision of what was going on inside. So I'm going to try to give you both.
Right. You were on the sidewalk outside picketing, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That's from May 16th. Basically, it started with a major demonstration, which was called by Pacifica Accountability Committee. And then we had the Pacifica campaign had daily pickets. And then we had a major demo on the 24th. But volunteers kept coming out, and they started joining us. Some of them would show up for our pickets every day. And then they started telling us about what was going inside. And a lot of them were quite dissatisfied. One woman volunteered, was let go because she engaged in a discussion with listeners who were calling in and asking them about how much they knew about the crisis within the station. And
wow.
And she was very upset about it. A couple of others joined us. And then we also realized that they brought in volunteers who had to do community work instead of going to jail, and also students from upper affluent schools where they were doing just training for a class. But
they brought people in who were assigned to do community work instead of going to jail?
Yeah. We had people coming out and telling us that these are volunteers. So, I mean, the whole experience was, for me personally, was an eye-opening experience to know that what extent they go to basically to not let anybody else be heard on this station, to control the voices and to censor people. And it was amazing what I saw.
And of course, a gag order is in effect at the station, and so there is there's no allowing of any discussion of any aspect of the crisis at KPFK or Pacifica over the radio there.
Right, right. And as far as the program Ming is concerned and the programmers, I had a few contact with people inside, and they're very unhappy, actually. Even some of the people who support fully Mark Shupp, Mark Cooper rule at this station, they're unhappy because there has been rumors about Mark Shupp trying to bring in programmers with big money that have a name at the other station, so that his reasoning is to bring in the followers. I don't want to name people right now, but there has been a rumor that they offered $100,000 for one of such programmers of the talk shows that have a lot of followers, and, you know, it's semi-liberal. So basically, their plan is to mainstream this station instead of letting community have access to it. And they go to any extent, even spending the money for it. And some of the programmers who've been volunteering or who've been having programs for a long time and they can't even get the hours they want are dissatisfied with what's going on. However, I've heard that some have written to the national board without getting any response. And they have nowhere to go as far as, you know, that's the highest authority who would determine if what Mark Shupp is doing is right or wrong. So
it does sound like, even though some staffers may be disappointed or disillusioned or frustrated with what's happening inside the station, that Mark Shupp and Mark Cooper, who is very influential, do have a fairly tight handle on the station and control what happens there and what comes out of there.
Yes. And the other thing is, let's talk about the programs they have on. You know, one of the reasons I joined this struggle is because I come from, you know, I was raised in a country where censorship, it was autocratic, censorship was dominant, and you were scared even to talk inside your home, thinking that somebody is listening to you about politics.
This is Iran.
This is Iran, yes. And sometimes, unfortunately, and you know, I've been involved in the struggle there, and sometimes, unfortunately, listening to KPFK or listening to the way that Mark Cooper scorns the listeners, it reminds me of my moments there. And it's quite unfortunate for me to see that in here, not thousands of listeners opposed to this kind of autocratic rule at a station instead of accepting it. What's happening is Mark Shupp is determining for all the listeners what they can hear or what they cannot hear.
Well, let's talk about what the response of some of the listeners, including you, has been. We're speaking with Farah Dovari. She's a longtime KPFK listener. She's an activist, and she is with the Pacifica Campaign, LA. Talk about what is being discussed and strategized on the ground. I know there are a number of opposition groups to Shupp and the Pacifica leadership, and so the agendas of these various groups aren't necessarily united. But what kinds of issues are people solidly behind? Are people united behind? And what kinds of actions are planned?
Yeah. My understanding is that everyone wants the national board to resign. That's just basically a minimum. And everyone wants some sort of a democratization plan so that the next board will be elected by the listeners so that what happened before cannot happen again. However, as far as what kind and how we go about this democratization, people have different views, and I'm sure at the other listening areas it's the same. As far as the activities, I can talk about what we have planned. As Pacifica Campaign, we started working officially here on May 14th. We've had many, many activities, such as we have had an action at one of the events of the Builders Industry Association of Southern California. That's the division of National Home Builders Association here, and we went to their event. There were about 500 people in the event, and we disrupted the event. We took the mic and we told the audience that we will be there at their events until Ken Ford resigns from the board of the Pacifica. We also participated in the action against Palmer. We went to his office and handed the letter to his to the president of the CB, Richard Ellis, his affiliation, and I guess everybody knows about what happened afterward.
He resigned.
The phone call campaign, he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
The other actions that we have planned is one important thing that has happened in the Southern California, where maybe you're not aware of, is they removed alternative radio from air. They used to air it every day, and they removed it because David Barsamian refused to let them use his tapes for fundraising at this station during the fund drive. And from there on, the show has been removed during the fund drive, and it's been removed now, and it's been replaced with, you know, surprisingly enough, with shows such as New Dimension that charges the station, whereas alternative radio was free for the station. And what we have done is we have put out a call to action to listeners. Now, being on the end of a receiving response to the listeners, I have realized that within the last few months, a lot more listeners, actually since Juan Gonzalez resigned on air and since Amy Goodman has been signing off with from the studios of the band and fired, a lot of listeners have sort of started realizing that something is going on, and it's like there's a crack in the censorship wall that we suffer from here in L.A. And
what do you mean by that? What do you mean by a crack in the censorship wall?
Well, by it, I mean a lot of listeners that would not have heard about this before have learned about it. And we could see that by the 1,300 people who attended the event on March 23rd here, where Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez came to speak. It was enormous. They had to change the venue from a smaller one to a larger one because, you know, the response was great. And many, many, you know, I was manning one of the doors, and many people who walked in didn't know anything before until they heard Juan Gonzalez resign on air. That was the first time they had heard about what's going on in Pacifica.
Cara Davari, excuse me, she's a longtime KPFK listener, and she is working currently on the staff of the Pacifica Campaign LA. Unfortunately, we're going to visit with a number of people from other signal areas, and so our time is limited. But I did want to ask, because the Pacifica Campaign had called for a boycott of this latest fund drive and had been pushing for execution of that boycott at all five of the stations, do you have any sense of how successful that boycott may have been at LA?
Yes, yes. We cut into their funds about 20%. I have a letter in front of me from Mark Shupp to the programmers, and it states that they earned about $423,934. A number, you know, from the last fund drive that I listened to, which was about a year ago this time, it was right, their number was right under 500,000. Now, you know that these numbers are not real. By the time they turn to the real funds for the station, about a third of it is gone, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But anyways, 420,000. First, their goal was about 480. Then the national office cut it down to 440 because they were scared of the kind of publicity. And, you know, with either number, they had to cut about 20% into their funds.
Farah Davari, this is not going to be the last time we talk to you. I want to spend more time on what's happening on LA, but I thank you for giving us a quick update. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to move now to D.C., where Sam Husseini is. Actually, he's in New York, but he is on the WPFW Local Advisory Board. He's a staffer at the Institute for Public Accuracy, and he is certainly one of the more active activist figures in this struggle. And Sam, are you there?
I am indeed. Thank you.
I know you're in New York, and I know you may have visited WBAI today, and I want to ask you about that in a moment, but tell us, remind us out here in Berkeley what WPFW's air sounds like there in D.C.
Right. Well, there was basically a gutting of WPFW about 10 years ago. It came in stages, but there was a pulling of the plug and so on here in D.C. Right now, PFW plays about 85% jazz. It has very little public affairs programming, and a lot of the public affairs, local public affairs that is there is kind of surprisingly mainstream. I was kind of surprised when I listened to PFW when I moved down to D.C. about 4 years ago from New York. I was used to BAI, which, you know, other than Democracy Now! And another show, Ambrose Lane, that there really isn't a lot of what you would call cutting-edge progressive programming
now, Bessie,
or meaningful community programming, and there's absolutely no local news.
Bessie Wash, who used to be the station manager at WPFW, moved over to become the executive director of the Pacifica Foundation. Lou Hankins is around. Who is Lou, and what is your sense of any opposition to Lou Hankins within the WPFW staff, either volunteer or paid?
Right. Well, I mean, you have to understand, WPFW is fundamentally in a state of fear. I mean, anybody who says anything out of line or whatever has been and will be gotten rid of. So it's very difficult to expect people who are working at the station under the circumstances to do the right thing. There's total censorship. If people call up, try to raise issues, they're immediately cut off. Democracy Now! Is censored daily now in Washington, D.C. Every time Amy signs off with From the Studios of the Fire and the Band, they fade to music just before she says that, and sometimes they mess up, and there's a little, you know, game of cat and mouse as to when Amy says that, and we know whether or not it gets through on the air in Washington, D.C. Although they didn't censor Democracy Now! During the fundraising drive. As a matter of fact, they sort of used Democracy Now! As a hostage. They ran promos saying, without you and your contribution to WPFW, there would be no Democracy Now! There would be no Amy Goodman on your radio.
Wow. What was the nature of her pitching during Democracy Now! During the fund drive at PFW?
She was doing her job.
Right.
I mean, she was, you know, getting on and saying, contribute to the station and so on. I mean, in sort of a surrealistic way, a gun was pointed to her head. So, I mean, it shows that they were basically lying, as I understand it, from Los Angeles and New York when they claimed that she wouldn't do pitching. She would do pitching, and she did do pitching for the most progressive just about of the station, WPFW. So when I was in the studios of WBAI today, and there was a eerie feel to the whole thing, a sort of siege mentality, I took down the guest, Jack Shaheen, whose new book on Arab stereotypes in the media and so on. That was the first time I'd heard in a very long time her sign off, because it's censored constantly.
Wow.
In Washington, D.C.
I want to ask you about what's going on with Amy, as far as you know, but you are on the LAB, the Local Advisory Board at WPFW, and, you know, theoretically, the LAB is supposed to be the voice of the community. It should have input and perspective into what's happening at the station. What is the relationship of the LAB at WPFW with the station management?
Well, they've refused to allow the LAB to meet at the station for just about a year now. They have refused for about that same amount of time to air the notification about when the meetings would take place. And even when they did that, unappealing possible, quote-unquote, promo you could imagine. It wasn't something that was going to help get people to the local advisory board meetings. Nonetheless, we've, you know, maintained the lab, and we elected Rob Robinson to our one of the dissident board members to another term, and he was brought on in the Houston meeting. And we've actually conducted several community needs assessment meetings in spite of the fact that the station will not announce those. The station will not return phone calls. The station does not respond to registered letters from the local advisory board. There's absolutely no feedback from the station to the local advisory board. They operate in a manner of total disregard for anything that the lab says.
Sam Husseini, active dissident in the Pacifica struggle. He is in the D.C. area. He works in the D.C. area at the Institute for Public Accuracy. He's a member of the WPFW Local Advisory Board, and he's helped organize a number of protests and other actions around the WPFW situation. Tell me briefly about two things, which was the daring, successful attempt to hang a banner at the building of the National Association of Home Builders in D.C. to protest Ken Ford's continuation on the Pacifica National Board. And then there were the big hearings in D.C. Initiated by Representative Major Owens. Did this attract some people in D.C. who might not be visible at some protests otherwise and galvanize some opposition to the climate of fear at WPFW?
Somewhat, yes. I think both events helped in D.C. It's still a long way to go. I mean, we do not have a mass movement in D.C. That you have either in Berkeley or in New York right now because the plug was pulled so long ago. But those hearings, for example, attracted several former programmers, people who had been forced out over the years from PFW, and that was a fresh of breath air so that we can, you know, try to be hooking up with people who have been forced out by some of the same elements who are currently in control of the network. Tom Porter, who's a former program director, came to the hearings. Eskia Muhammad, who has a program on the WPFW, but he's pretty much only allowed to spin records. He's not allowed to actually, you know, engage politically in a serious way, but he writes for a newspaper, and so he wrote a piece on the hearings and so on. So those types of activities here in D.C. are helping to, you know, bring people into the process and to let people be aware that, you know, we if we're on the road to victory here, then you know, we're going to have to, you know, really know how to run the very, you know, serious and valuable progressive community radio station.
Right. And finally, Sam, we only have a couple minutes left, but you were, as you said, inside WBAI studios today. You mentioned a little bit about the climate there. Did you get to interact with anybody at Democracy Now, and do you have any other details on what's happening there?
Well, the reason for my going down there was to accompany somebody who was a guest on Democracy Now. We both happened to be in New York for a conference. There's obviously tension between what I think was tension between the engineer and the staff of Democracy Now. There's a real level of tension just going into the station. You know, you could really, you know, cut it with a knife. There was even a Save WBAI bumper sticker in the studios, which I found very amusing that they, you know, that was there and it hadn't been taken off. Utrecht Lead, the station manager, WBAI, wasn't around, but, you know, it was obvious that she oftentimes is and is oftentimes haranguing the staff of Democracy Now! As they're about to go on air. I think that they were operating out of a tiny studio for several weeks.
Yes.
And they were finally let back into the major studio, which is where I saw them today.
So they're being treated at least physically a little more humanely there. Sam Hussein at the WPFW Local Advisory Board. He's a staffer at an amazing group called the Institute for Public Accuracy in D.C. I want to thank you very much for weighing in with your D.C. perspective. Thanks a lot, Sam.
Thank you, C.S.
Okay. The show is Living Room. I'm C.S. Song, sitting in for Chris Welch. I want to make an announcement that Larry Bensky on Sunday Salon this Sunday will be talking to one of the attorneys for these lawsuits. I believe he's with the LAB lawsuit. His name is Dan Siegel. He's an Oakland attorney. He's been on the situation for a long time. And Dan Siegel will be Larry's guest this Sunday. And, of course, Sunday Salon airs from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Sunday. Joining us now in our all-too-quick tour of the Pacifica Signal areas, and especially those that we don't hear much about, is Sheila Harris. She is a longtime activist in Houston, and she's been agitating for some time to change KPFT's leadership, KPFT's programming, and also the current leadership of the Pacifica Foundation. Welcome, Sheila.
Hi, thank you.
And remind us, folks who don't get to listen to KPFT, maybe fortunately, remind us briefly what is on KPFT these days, or what is the programming content there like?
It's 80% of the format is music currently. We do not have a news director. We do not have a news program. Currently, we have two progressive shows that are on right now, and each of those shows, we get about 2 hours for each of those shows in a week. So we get about 4 hours of progressive programming in 1 week. So it's largely a music format.
I hear of the public affairs programming you have, there's some, BBC, PRI, is that correct?
Exactly. We do get BBC. We do get The World. That is played twice a day. We are currently playing also, our KPFT is currently playing PNN News. And The World does have corporate underwriting, which KPFT states that they do not accept any corporate underwriting, but Merck and Upside Financial also sponsors that program.
Does Garland Ganter, who is the station manager there, and of course he's the infamous guy who came over to Berkeley in 1999 and helped shut down the station and lock out the staff.
Right.
Has Garland Ganter ever tried to justify the fact that there is no news director or no local news programming on KPFT?
Well, he has been stating since August of 99 that he will be hiring a news director. So far, he has not. I know that there is an ad out asking for actually, the ad isn't just for a news director. It's also for a program host who is very knowledgeable with public affairs, but that person has not been hired as of yet. But he has stated that also with training programs, that the reason we no longer have training programs at KPFT is because he stated actually this Wednesday at the local advisory board meeting that they were training so many people, but they had no place to put them, so they stopped the training classes completely. So there are no training programs either. And mainly during the day, we have paid DJs who spin a very, very strict playlist of music.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a perception in Berkeley, I'm sure, maybe in other areas, that Houston is a rather conservative area, that there's not a big progressive community, and therefore there may not be a large pool of people from which active dissidents, active opponents to Garland Ganter, to KPFT's regime, to the Pacifica national leadership can be drawn. Is that a correct assessment?
Well, it is a very conservative town, but there are a lot of different progressive groups in this town, but they're scattered about this town. It's a very large city, and they're isolated. There are a lot of different progressive groups that are isolated, and it's very difficult to get people involved in this issue because a lot of people have, you know, we haven't had KPFT for the past 10 years or more, and a lot of people have forgotten what this radio station is, what Pacifica is. They've forgotten how effective a radio station could be.
Right.
And it's difficult to involve people in this issue also because they believe it's a single issue, although it's an issue that encompasses so many different movements. It would be so effective and helpful for so many different progressive groups. But just trying to educate people on how powerful a 100,000-watt radio station is difficult.
Yeah, I'm Sheila Harris, longtime activist, longtime listener in Houston. Of course, KPFT is Pacifica's station in Houston, Texas. You and many other folks there recently directed a lot of attention to Michael Palmer and David Acosta, who until recently sat on the national board. And I wondered if you could give us your on-the-ground story of what you folks did locally to help pressure both men off the national board.
Okay. Well, once again, saying that this is a very conservative town, protests are very few. And very far in between. They're not very frequent here, so having people protest in front of your business or in front of KPFT is extremely effective here. We had about 10 to maybe 15 people protest Palmer at his place of business. We actually started that after the board meeting here in March, so he had actually not been protested before here in Houston, other than we had gone down to KPFT to protest, which he's normally not there, so it wasn't very effective for focusing on him. And then shortly after that, he resigned, and then we moved our efforts on to David Acosta, protested in front of his place of business. There were about 10 to 15 people there also. We protested a few times, and he resigned shortly after that. As a matter of fact, we protested the Friday before the weekend he announced his resignation. We're now focusing on Valerie Chambers, the last person who, quote-unquote, represents Houston.
Well, tell us a little bit about Valerie Chambers and what you think her vulnerability is to being pressured off the national board.
Well, Valerie Chambers came in out of the blue. She wasn't part of the local advisory board at any point that anybody's aware of. She was a student at the University of Houston, an accounting student, and she is also a visiting associate professor at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, which is 3 hours away. However, she does live in Houston, and we're calling for her to resign, and if she doesn't resign in the next week, we will be putting the same types of pressures on her that we did on Michael Palmer and David Acosta.
I should say that in my experiences observing her at, say, Pacifica National Board meetings, mm-hmm. I have never heard her say one word. Mm-hmm. She seems like a very quiet person who tends to follow the lead of some of the other stronger personalities on the national board, and so perhaps she might be vulnerable for that reason as well.
Right, that's the sense we get also.
Mm-hmm. And let me, in our short time together, ask you about the Fun Drive boycott there. I know the Pacifica campaign was trying to withhold funds from KPFT as well. Do you have any sense of whether the boycott had any effect in Houston?
It seemed to possibly have an effect. It was basically word of mouth here, trying to get the information out about boycotting Pacifica. We did get a lot of help from the Independent Media Center here, which has just began the past few months, and I think that was very instrumental in probably passing the word out. I attended the local advisory board meeting Wednesday. Garland Ganter made the comment that they did have a successful fundraiser this past time, but the past few times they've had fundraisers, his attitude was a lot more jovial, and the words that were used with that were, we've had record-breaking fundraising this time around. So it seems like that perhaps they didn't make as much.
No records broken this time, huh?
Right, exactly.
Sheila Harris, she joins us from Houston, where she's listened and agitated around KPFT for some time. And let me finish by asking you about the lab. The Houston LAB is the only LAB from which no members join the LAB lawsuit against the Pacifica National Board. How, give us the tenor and tone of the local LAB there.
Okay. The local advisory board here, the members are not sympathetic to the Save Pacifica activists. They, I started attending these meetings in 99 here, and they were unaware of what had happened at KPFA They were unaware of Garland Ganter's involvement in shutting down KPFA. We've attempted at various lab meetings to give them information on what's occurring within Pacifica. They have no knowledge of the history of Pacifica. They, as a matter of fact, most recently in March, members, people who attended these meetings, audience members, had asked the lab chair, Susan Darrow, here, why the local advisory board didn't even have a secretary or a vice chair. And they all looked at Garland and asked him if he could request guidance from the national board as to if they were allowed to have a secretary, and if so, how would they go about choosing a secretary? Not aware of what's going on. They weren't aware of what was going on at WBAI either when we mentioned this at the lab meetings. They're unaware of what's happening. We've attempted to educate them by giving them information, but they stated that they're not interested in what's happening at the other sister stations there at KPFT.
Sheila Harris at KPFT in Houston, not at KPFT, but in Houston, doing a lot of work around KPFT. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Living Room. Thanks, Sheila.
Thanks.
And joining us in studio now is John Sheridan for the Berkeley Perspective, or for One Berkeley Perspective. He is a long-time struggler in this fight. He's a member of the Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica, which in my view has been one of the consistently strong and just consistent in the sense of meeting and discussing and keeping their energy up around this years-long struggle. John, welcome to Living Room.
Thank you, C.S.
Well, there's quite a bit to talk about, of course, but let's start with Carolyn Van Putten, the local Bay Area addition, somewhat recent addition to the Pacifica National Board, ally of Lynn Chadwick. What happened with Carolyn Van Putten that you can enlighten us about that maybe helped her to resign?
Well, much like Sheila mentioned about the Houston situation, Carolyn Van Putten came on the board at the same time Tomas Moran came on in late 99. We'd heard about her at KPFA as one of the people who had come and scabbed and was actually with Lynn Chadwick, who was going to actually sit in the studio if Larry Bensky, after his firing, dared to return. That was the first we heard about her. Next, we hear that she's on the board. But, as I say, like in Houston, she has really escaped the notice of a lot of the activism here, partly because she wasn't on the executive committee, but also she does keep personally a low profile. However, Carolyn was on the board of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. She runs Western Public Radio. She's on the board of, I believe it's called City Visions, which is a television group in San Francisco, and has really a number of affiliations. She's a musician. She's a very active public person. And it, in the evolution of the struggle and the ongoing opportunity for the listening community here, who are organized to find ways to help in the struggle, it became very clear that she had been given really a free ride in all of this, and that we really had to step forward. We had a lot of encouragement from the Pacifica campaign and their focus on board members, and we overcame actually some divisions within the listening community about approaching her. I called a picket of her place of employment at Fort Mason on June 8th, and then through the network that we've developed as listeners, we got information from one of our activists and a listener that she was also going to be speaking at a spiritual event in Oakland on the 17th of June. This prompted contacting the group, who were completely unaware of her affiliation with Pacifica. They disinvited her immediately.
Wow. This is Matthew Fox in the University for Creation Spirituality.
Yes.
Yes.
And specifically the Technocosmic Ritual Mass, the Friends of Technocosmic Ritual Mass. They were very unaware because she does keep such a low profile, but they acted instantaneously. And I believe it was at this point, the next day, that Carolyn quit. And which, of course, helped stampede David Acosta to the same decision. So, well, we were very gratified that we were able to, with the help of this network of listeners, gather pertinent information, put it in the hands of people of goodwill, like Matthew Fox's group, who did the right thing. And she realized that her social base, her bona fides in our community, was eroding, and that we were taking the rungs away from the ladder that she was trying to climb.
Well, speaking of rungs and ladders and maybe creating a situation where there's no place to hide, you've now started to focus on Ken Ford, and I know you helped organize the Wednesday action at, presumably at that point, the president's office of the National Association of Home Builders, where Ken Ford works. And I know that wasn't quite the place where he works. And what are you doing now to try and pressure NAHB to get Ken Ford to leave the board?
Yes. Well, Bruce Smith, who's the president of the NAHB, has a mail stop, a quasi-office in Walnut Creek, in fact. And while this is not a normal place of employ, we're looking at that as actually a focus for a future action. The Pacifica campaign, again, being, you know, they're very motivated. Juan Gonzalez and Dan Coughlin and others are very motivated. They're very focused on the board members at this point. They're putting out days. And June 10th is going to be a day of action, National Day of Action against the National Association of Home Builders, Ken Ford's employer. And so we feel that actually that this site in Walnut Creek, at 101 Ignacio Valley Road, where Mr. Smith does have some sort of office, actually for the 10th would be really an appropriate place. And I believe that we're going to come back to this with as many listeners as we can. There'll be more details later. But that's going to be, I think, a focus. Prior to that, you know, and as a mark of you know, certainly civility, and as a reasonable approach, we do want to try and meet with Bruce Smith and have a small face-to-face meeting and really explain where we're coming from non-antagonistically and offer him our services to help resolve the Ken Ford problem, because Ken Ford's becoming a liability for the National Association for Home Builders, and I don't think that they really they don't really need it. So I think Ken Ford is as vulnerable as Michael Palmer was.
I want to invite callers to call into the show at 510-848-4425. We're still joined, by the way, by Sheila Harris from the Houston Signal area, so if you have questions for her as well. But John, continuing here, I know there's an emergency meeting of the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica this Monday. What kinds of issues do you think are important for the community at this stage of the struggle to start focusing on?
Right. Yeah, Monday at 7:30 at the Unitarian Fellowship in Berkeley, we will be meeting, and that's at the corner of Cedar and Bonita Streets, and everyone is invited. This is a public meeting. We're billing it an emergency meeting because of the developments with the resignations on the Pacifica board. We feel that there are more potential imminent defections from the board, and that this is going to create certainly an enormous opportunity for the negotiations and the lawsuits to proceed if they've come to the stage of discovery. Combining those two events, I think that the community absolutely has to organize, make their voices heard as to what they want in the negotiations with Pacifica. Do we want unconditional surrender? I think at this point that's what we should be demanding. They should all leave, and they should leave with absolutely no conditions. They just have to absolutely go. And but there are many other issues. The next phase of all of this would have to include discussion of what would an interim Pacifica board look like, what powers would it have, who would choose it, who would serve on it, and how long would it last. These are absolutely crucial issues that listeners really have an opportunity to organize around, and we encourage everybody to come to the coalition meeting on Monday at 7:30 at the Unitarian
Fellowship at Cedar and Bonita Streets in Berkeley. Again, that's 7:30 on Monday. And is there a phone number for that?
Yes, you can call 510-652-0272.
510-652-0272 for more information about a meeting at which some of these very pressing issues, given where we are in the struggle, will be discussed. And I want to welcome to the show Craig from Midpines. Craig, welcome to Living Room.
Hi. Hi. Yeah. Glad you devoted a whole program to a tour of all the other stations. I think it's salutary for people to get a feel of that overall effort. I used to live in Los Angeles, and I guess you could say I cut my teeth on KPFK, and I keep in touch with people down there. I'd like to just offer a few insights, if you will.
How about your one major one, given that we don't have much time left?
Well, basically, it has to do with what it is that's holding back the struggle there. What kind of undergirds the situation, and that is that there's somewhat of a split in the progressive community there. I guess you could say to some degree it falls along the cleavage between liberal and more left-wing people. Not entirely. But there's been a problem. I mean, we, as activist listeners up here, we would naturally expect, for instance, the ACLU to be solidly on the side of what we consider free speech. And yet they've been holding back because there's a lot of what you might, as a social scientist, might call kinship networks. The people who are firmly in control of the station have a lot of friends in, for instance, the ACLU or the Southern California ADA, and that's really held back the struggle. But that's slowly starting to change.
You know, Craig, this is very good information, and I do understand the struggle there is fragmented. And let me just say that as a producer, I'm going to try and focus on doing more detailed analysis and reporting on what's happening in L.A. So I want to thank you very much for your call, and we need to move on to Lawrence in Berkeley. Lawrence, welcome to Living Room.
Yeah, hi. Yes, yes, and John, you've done wonderful work. It's fantastic in getting these people to resign, and I hope more people will resign with the pressure. But I wanted to ask, in the meantime, what's to keep the board from putting on new reactionaries? Is there any possibility of getting an emergency injunction to prevent them from putting on new people?
That might be a question for Larry Bensky's show, Sunday Salon, when Dan Siegel joins him Sunday morning from 9 to 11, or 1 hour thereof. I don't know whether either Sheila from Texas or John Sheridan wants to respond to that.
Lawrence, I may be mistaken, and people can certainly correct me if I'm wrong. I believe there's a stipulation among the parties in the lawsuits that Epstein, Becker, and Green has to report any significant changes in the operations of Pacifica. They have to give the judge, Judge Sabraw of the Oakland Superior Court, a 30-day notice. And I would hope that trying to pack the board with more illegal thieving cronies would qualify in the judge's eyes as a significant change. And that would hopefully give us time to remind anyone who is thinking of coming on the Pacifica National Board that they would immediately become a defendant in at least three lawsuits.
Yeah, and this is my understanding as well, that there has so much leverage now with these three lawsuits that anything Pacifica tries to do, the lawyers of these three lawsuits can go to court and say this is a substantive change in situation and we're seeking an injunction. Let's move on to Harvey in Oakland. Harvey, welcome to Living Room.
Yes, hello. Hello, John.
Yeah. Hi, Harvey.
Yeah. Either you happened to listen to NPR on KLW yesterday morning. They did a really good segment on WBAI, and they played some this really chilling quote direct from Utrice Lead, where she said, "We are a collective, not a collection of individuals, and all these people need to get with the program."
Yeah, she uses the royal "we," I think, a little precipitously there.
Yeah, but this WBI thing is slowly but surely getting into the mainstream news, including NPR.
That's good news, Harvey. Thanks a lot. And let's move on to Charlie in Mountain View. Welcome to Living Room with Sheila Harris from Houston and John Sheridan from Berkeley.
Hi. It seems to me that you guys should get rid of the slogan free speech radio until things are worked out, because it seems like there's more free speech on KSFO and talk radio.
It's very possible. Are you referring to some of these other stations or to KPFA?
I'm referring to like Well, I mean, I mean, there's no free speech on KPFA as far as I know. I mean, you have a hour-long talk show, but that consists of 45 minutes of talking to different people, the guests and stuff, and then you open up the phone lines for 15 minutes, and you call that talk radio. I mean, I think you need more, at least have some more talk shows, at least.
Okay, well, that's something to bring up with the program council, perhaps. And, you know, my agenda today, at least, was to get you as much information as possible, but I can understand that frustration. Sheila Harris, does KPFT try to represent itself in any way as a free speech radio station?
Yes, it does. I don't know if you've ever visited its website, but it has written all over free speech radio, free speech radio. It does still attempt to say that it is a Pacifica station beholden to the original mission.
Sheila Harris, longtime activist in Houston at KPFT. If people want to find out more about what's happening down there, is there a website or a phone number or some information?
I can give you my email address, and people can also visit the Houston Indie Media website. It's houston.indymedia.org. And my email address is freeradiohouston@yahoo.com.
freeradiohouston.com.
@yahoo.com.
Thank you, @yahoo.com or houston.indymedia.org. Great. Thank you very much. And John Sheridan, again, phone numbers, websites for the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica?
Yeah, the phone number that we gave out earlier, the 6520272 number, would be a good phone number. The Coalition's website is www.cfdp.org. I also really encourage people to visit www.savepacifica.net. Very wonderful, wonderful site. I'd also like to give a shout out to all the people who are right now outside in San Francisco picketing Epstein, Becker, and Green, as we've been doing since November. I want to give some kudos to them, because they have really been bricks in this struggle. And Epstein, Becker, and Green has complained very loudly about us being out there, but we're not going away as long as they're involved.
Thanks again, John. And again, this Sunday on Sunday Salon, 9 to 11 this morning, Dan Siegel will join Larry Bensky to talk about the lawsuits against the Pacifica National Board. And that does wrap it up for another edition of Living Room. It comes your way each weekday from noon to 1. For cassette copies of the show, call 510-848-6767, extension 625. If you have comments, our comments line is extension 462 with the same phone number. I'm the producer of Living Room, C.S. Song, sitting in for Chris Welch, who will be back with you Monday. The show's associate producer is Erica Bridgman, and Erica is at the controls. Thanks for listening. Take care. We'll